reason it's a no-go. Talking to
Cheryl.
And Cheryl, what, you came down here to the basement of the county building to check on a panhandling ticket. What happened with that?
They didn't have anything on me.
Now, when did you think you got this ticket?
I got 22nd of September. I was supposed to go to court the 29th of October.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That what the officer wrote that on the ticket?
Right.
And what were you doing that caused the officer to give you the ticket?
I was holding the sign out in front of the post office.
Were you standing or sitting?
I was sitting on the steps.
And what was this CSO Malafe, a man with light blue, a service officer of an Asian American older man?
Yes.
And what did he tell you?
He told me he was going to give me a ticket, and he said, then he swore me one time after that, and the time again, he gave me another ticket, and then he warned me again after that and said, next time I'm going to go to jail, because he's tired of writing tickets.
So, did he give you a ticket the first time he saw you there?
Yes.
And then the second time he gave you a warning?
Right.
And the third time he gave you another ticket?
Yes.
And the fourth time he warned you he was going to take you to jail the next time?
Right.
Are you aware that having a sign and sitting on the steps of the post office is a completely legal activity? It is not considered panhandling?
That's what I figured.
What is illegal is to sit down anywhere downtown and ask for money. You can actually stand up and ask for money in different places, provided you're 10 feet away from a store, and I think it's 10 or 15 feet away from a crosswalk. There's a series of restrictions. But it is completely legal any time of the day or night to sit down, provided you're not blocking the sidewalk, with a sign and say, want money for some reason. Malafe has been misinforming people about this activity, which may be the reason the ticket is not there.
That's the way I take it.
And one thing you can do is you can go to the city attorney's office. Do you have a copy of the ticket?
No, I don't, because it got wet.
I see. But you did get a ticket. You did write your ticket.
Right, he wrote two.
The other thing you can do is you can go to the Homeless Issues Task Force, which is considering this kind of bogus bullshit that's coming down. I mean, we think the whole idea of harassing people for asking peacefully for spare change is bullshit anyway. But harassing people in an illegal way, creating laws that aren't even there, or misusing laws, misreading what the real law is, just because you want to get rid of someone, I think that is particularly abusive.
I agree with it.
So if you're interested, the legal committee of the Homeless Issues Task Force meets every Wednesday at 5:30 at Loudoun Nelson Center. You might want to come and check that out. You'd be invited to come.
All right, yeah, I'll check that out.
Okay. So Cheryl, I'll kind of run you through the library here, and you've checked out codes, the city codes. Have you been cited for panhandling before?
Yes, I have.
And how long ago was that?
I was in a different town.
So how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
About 3 months.
And what do you make of the town?
Well, it's pretty good so far, except for the
harassment from Officer Malafe.
Harassments. We get.
Anything else you want to say for free radio?
I just wish I didn't have these laws. And right, Bolestigas, it's just a waste of time.
Thank you.
At a previous meeting, a woman named Bruna Hernandez came and spoke to your group about her trials and tribulations as a recycler and how she's being pursued by garbage trucks, and she had an incident where four members of the that have to do with the department, I don't know what department that is, that collects the garbage, but they actually pursued her in a vehicle, stopped her car, and then came out and confiscated all of her cans and bottles. This was right after she had left Tampico's downtown, where she had taken the cans and bottles out of the recycle bin where she had the permission of the owner to do so. And I'm very concerned about this immense amount of city resources and intimidation tactics that are being used against Bruno Hernandez when it seems like it would be in the best interest of the city of Santa Cruz to have a policy that allows business owners to give their recyclables to the recycler of their choice. The other issue that I wanted that came when I spoke to her, I had talked to Mayor Catherine Byers about Verna's situation and that she was getting this recycling money to put medication for her very severely disabled child. She had cerebral palsy. And Catherine Byers expressed some doubt because she said, well, she's low income, she'll be on show or Medi-Cal, and that they would cover her medications for her child. So I asked Verna about this, and Verna said that there were several medications that she was on show, she did have Medi-Cal, but several medications were not covered by show. One that her daughter needs very badly is a laxative, a special laxative, and that's the one that she's getting this extra money to pay for. And that there was another medication that its purpose is to prevent damage to her daughter's liver. And it's $300 a month for this medication, and that it's not covered by show or Medi-Cal, and that the reason it's not covered is because her daughter doesn't have a damaged liver now. It's only a preventative. If after her daughter's liver is damaged by another medication she needs to take, then the show and Medi-Cal will kick in and pay for a medication to treat the damage, but because it's a preventative, it's not allowed. So she's unable to provide that particular medication to her daughter. And so that's my report.
Was she pursued since she was
here?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, I have to interject first. Housekeeping. I'm having a timekeeper. I can't see the clock. My watch doesn't match my battery or something. And I would like the phone and the hospital so that we can help them. And I would like them to be able to volunteer. Okay. Hello. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. So again, Marilyn and Brian and Robert, and we're going to see if we can do it again.
Okay. I just wanted to speak as a person on this planet about something that really bothers me. A man we've known for many years, who's been homeless for a good 18 years, and who's known in this town by a lot of the police officers in this town and everybody at the shelter. He was found dead in the river this last week. And the part that upsets me, on top of the fact that had he had a place to be, he might not be dead now. He was an alcoholic, and therefore he did not fit the criteria to go on the church groups or the army. And
they didn't have an opening in Janus the day before his
death.
And he was calling.
He was calling. For Ray Wesley Stitt. And so he is, and he was beaten and staved off a beating as fast, was it May or June, I can't remember, wrong name. But this goes to show you
talking about Ray Stitz, who died
how many people fell through the cracks.
Body was found floating in the river.
Another man that didn't have to die. Like some of the other men that didn't have to die in the last few months, it has happened because services don't reach everyone. They aren't comprehensive. They don't help those people who don't fit in to the right spaces. And this is a good example to show you that we need better services. And I can't see how, and we'll have to document all the people who died as a result of not being able to partake of a service because of their alcohol or drug, substance abuse, whatever. There needs to be something that addresses this problem. Because we didn't need to lose someone else like this. He was a good man. They are. And it's just a waste of a human life to have it happen like this when it could have been prevented.
And we are listening to the annals of the Homeless Issues Task Force, which I've sometimes called the Task Farce, but actually I think it gets closest to its mandate when people from the community, the houseless community, come and speak and express immediate concerns. This immediate concern was from Marilyn Weaver, who's actually a Task Force member, talking about the case of Ray Stitt, who some of you may remember filed a complaint against a outright violent assault by a troll buster. In a daytime assault, it happened at Harvey West Park about an hour before a Huff meeting. He came to us with his arms bleeding while we were holding this meeting at the Homeless Services Center. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for those of you who don't know. And we called the police, and the police took his report, and then of course nothing was ever heard of it. Presumably the police were unable to solve that case. I don't know much about Ray Stitz. He was an older man, kind of a wiry guy. Plain spoken, he expressed pride at having scared away the trollbusters, but he was bleeding. This was back in April or May, maybe even June. And we learned last week he had been found Monday floating in the river, and there was a considerable controversy around this, as you just heard, because three reports in the Sentinel seemed to trivialize and misidentify his death, not in terms of the name of the person. Actually, the name of the person didn't make it till the third story, but Sergeant Clark, the police department sergeant who was quoted by the Sentinel, initially said, according to the Sentinel, that he looked too well dressed to be a transient, and it was never made really clear, or not until the very end, that he was a homeless person, as whether the emphasis or the spin on this was from the Sentinel, from the police department. The police department has regularly held that there are no systematic hate crimes against homeless people in this area at this time. It does acknowledge there are Aryan skinheads running out engaging in hate crimes generally, but not against homeless people, which I think is hard for me to believe, given the testimony of people like Joe Barker, whose assailant, Aaron Birch, was convicted of assault and faces sentencing on December, actually faces incarceration on December 1st. I believe he's going to get 4 months for the homeless beating and 4 months for carrying a gun in the back of his car in an improper fashion. So that was what the Homeless Issues Task Force was talking about during its oral communications or public comment session. They meet every 2 weeks, although I think they're going to be meeting less over the holiday season, which of course, if we are to connect their meetings with any kind of action, that's a real sad thing, because it's during this season that more and more the needs of the homeless community are going to become clearer, and you're going to get some charity overflow here, and people are going to be feeling compassionate and giving out more turkey meat and Christmas gifts. But in terms of basic human rights, well, there's a real question. And let me use that to segue you into my first guest, perhaps my last guest. It looks like my other guest hasn't shown. If you're listening, by the way, guests out there that haven't been able to make it to the studio, give a call to 427-3772. And then that, of course, is also an option for anyone listening who wants to join in this discussion. 427-3772. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, and the show is Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides, and we're concerned with civil rights for poor people. And we've lost a guest, and we're hoping we can find him. So Paul, if you're out there, give us a call, 427-3772. How's your mic working there, Glenn?
Yeah, I thought I'd test it before we started.
Try a little bit. Sorry, try again.
Yeah, am I on the air now?
I think you are. I'll say something else.
Well, Huff, did you know you were going to have what the subject was you were going to surprise me with tonight?
Well, you know, I'm really kind of interested in giving you an opportunity to do some speaking about an issue that you've been bringing to public forums for me in a somewhat mystifying manner, because I've read your communications to Huff. You've written two letters regarding ways you see of proceeding against tickets under Municipal Code 6.36.010A, which is, of course, the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance, perhaps even against other anti-homeless tickets. And I wanted you to sort of present to those of us who are listening your thoughts on this, and give us your thoughts as to how perhaps we can proceed. That's one, I know, area you've been considering. Another is You mentioned you're considering an initiative to remove from office the venerable Chief Steve Belcher, chief of our police force. We tried to get Belcher on the air to just debate this with you, but I'm afraid, no, actually, we haven't contacted Steve on this issue because Steve is an elusive man to reach. I think actually he has been away from town. That's the excuse the Citizens Police Review Board had for not engaging in a routine bit of business to wait until dear old Steve Belcher came back. So his input on whether CSOs, community service officers, should be considered police officers and subject to civilian review would be considered before it went to city council, which in my mind, of course, is preposterous. But let's leave that aside. So you've got at least two issues concern you. And of course, you know, you're welcome to talk on whatever issues you want to talk about. What would you like to start with?
Well, I thought I might catch you up with things along with the rest of the public. Not that you're not ahead of me a lot of times.
No, not necessarily.
The camping ordinance. Well, part of the problem with this is that I've been diving into law so deep that I'm going to sound like, you know, something foreign here. But the camping ordinance can be beaten. And one of the things that's interesting is that municipal code is not allowed to conflict with state statutes. And a lot of the municipal codes tend to, because they're trying to achieve a goal of their own interest versus the interest of the public, such as crowd control, whereas there's no criminal intent among those people that are trying to control, but they just think they ought to be controlled. You know, if the laws were in harmony with state laws, people's rights would be much better attended to. I can't say I'm in love with state laws, but I had the opportunity of going in on issues that really concern me, and I found quality statutes on those issues. And so far, I haven't found any that are really seriously a problem. Except, I mean, I found one that was, of course, but I was able to deal with that problem and get a correction. So so far, it's been a fruitful avenue.
Now, you yourself are a man who has been doing some sleeping outside. In fact, you do sleep outside, right?
Yeah, I'm sleeping out this winter, and I have for many years.
Have you gotten any tickets in the course of this activity?
Only many years ago, I got one or two camping tickets. One, I just come back into town, and I camped in a pretty visible spot, and I didn't get up early, and the joggers called the cops.
And was that a 6.360108 type ticket, or?
I don't remember. It was a long time ago. It was in the 80s. What I did was I went to court to postpone the ticket, and with in mind that maybe he might forget it, and the judge did dismiss it at that time.
Remember the judge's name?
No, it was a long time.
He was a very positive person.
He said, "We think you can be a positive member of this community and this and this." And I didn't pay attention.
That's good. I know in the 80s there was a heavy camping ticket. It was open season on campers, as I remember, at least in the late 80s. So at that time, you hadn't yet evolved your new proposed defense to these camping tickets, which has to do with a conflict with state law. Is that correct?
It may seem a little verbose, but and I don't know if I have it on me right here. But basically, it's that even though, you know, these crimes are called infractions, they're still under the designation of crime. And in order to be guilty of a crime, you have to have criminal intent. And since sleep is necessary, it's quite hard to have criminal intent about going to sleep. So unless, you know, one is camping on purpose to harass the police, basically the act of camping in order to sleep is not a crime. You're not committing a crime. Hmm. So it is certainly a valid argument. And of course, one has to be just somewhat prepared to take that argument to court.
Mm-hmm. Shall I play devil's advocate here?
Well, you do as you like.
Because I don't know if I've actually seen this particular defense used in court. I would certainly as a curious observer, I'm open to any kind of defense. What I know, which is limited, I'm not an attorney. I don't spend a lot of my time in the law library. I've done a lot of research in bits and pieces around the sleeping ordinance because I've got, you know, I've had a particular interest in it. My understanding, and I could be wrong about this, but my understanding is that in terms of intent, they've got what they call specific intent crimes and general intent crimes. And the specific intent crime requires you have formed a specific intent to engage in a particular piece of behavior. You may not even consider it criminal, but it's not relevant whether you consider it criminal. It's relevant whether it is criminal under the law books.
Mm, interesting.
I could be wrong, but that's
my
understanding.
Well, something flashed to mind mm-hmm. when you said that.
Sure.
One is the statutes and evidence code under judicial notice. there are two statutes. One I didn't consult all the time, so I don't have verbatim right now. Mm-hmm. But the one that requires judicial notice, it gives all the conditions that a judge has to abide by in a courtroom if it's brought to his attention in the body of the courtroom. But there's one right before that that says that a judge may not, that cannot take notice, he has to take notice of only things that are provided for in statutes, that he can't, you know, just anything just can't be brought before him,
right,
to be noticed.
There has to be a specific
and
case
I'm
of some sort.
I'm quite sure that what you're talking, specific intent and general intent, that's not in penal code. It's not in public statutory law. It may be in decisional law, which a judge has to take notice of. But I don't have those cases, and it's certainly not in public statutory law.
Let me tell you where
and,
I got.
So the public wouldn't have that.
Sure, I don't have the law books, and I can't say whether it comes from statutory law or case law or common law, or whether it's some judicial process that's in some other legal canon. I know that when I worked with then attorney Ray Glock Grunike, who made this standing challenge to the courts that he would defend every single person who came forward with a sleeping ticket. He was eventually disbarred, I should mention, and that was because he took too many cases and missed his deadlines and screwed up, but the number of people he helped was considerable, and I believe he was kind of encyclopedic in his knowledge of, not necessarily always correct, of course, but pretty accurate and pretty incisive around the camping ordinance. And what I picked up from him as I observed a lot of these camping cases, Glenn, was that as you look at the sleeping ban section of the camping ordinance, which is 6.36010 A, B, and C for all you legal eagles out there, that's the laws that make it illegal to sleep outside, illegal to sleep in a vehicle, and illegal to camp, where camping means having some kind of shelter or establishing a campsite overnight. The first two sections, A and B, sleeping anywhere in a vehicle or outside a vehicle. The second one is actually covering up with blankets, and the third is camping with some protective covering like a tent and camping equipment. The first two sections, the blanket ban and the sleeping ban, as I call them, the ones we've really been trying to get rid of because it's such a clear human rights violation, get rid of them legislatively, that is, without success from the city council, they are treated by attorneys, as I've seen it, when you get an attorney. Most of the time you don't get an attorney in these cases, but when attorneys come forward to help, you don't have to prove an intent to engage in sleeping behavior. It's not specified on the code. It just says all the cop has to do is find you asleep. If you're found asleep outside of any house or hotel, with very narrow exceptions, there are a few of them, you can sleep in your vehicle in a business parking lot, under certain circumstances, and similarly in a church parking lot. I'm just telling you what my experience in the courts is. You know, you could well crack this whole thing if you could, you know, show code sections to the judge.
It's not too hard to do.
And that would be great. I'd like to see that. But what it's generally been the practice of the courts in this jurisdiction has,
as far as I know, if they don't strip my rights, you know.
Well, that's good. I mean, in terms of your personal experience, I'm glad, and you're saying you haven't yourself been hassled in the last...
No, it's just that as I go on more, you know, take on more and more court situations, and I'm losing for one reason or another, that momentum carries forward. And pretty soon they just get used to, you know, knocking you down with nothing. The last time the judge didn't have anything underneath them.
Well, that's very true. I know with Dennis Rehm, we heard Dennis Rehm is a man who had been following his case in court. He refused to pay fines under the sleeping ban. He was arrested for sleeping in his vehicle, given a ticket, and he's been in court, 13 times in the last year on this one ticket. He said he will not pay the fine. And the judge did this bizarre decision, Judge Danner, which said... well, we're going to rescind the warrant and give you community service. He said again. I guess this had been done at least once before, maybe twice, but he said we can still ticket you for doing this stuff. And he wouldn't cite he wouldn't cite any legal precedents that allowed the court to jail people for infractions, non-vehicular infractions. And this is pretty technical to all you folks out there that are new to this issue. I apologize because a lot of you are probably thinking, what are these two guys babbling about? What we're talking about are ways for homeless people, or actually anybody, whether you're homeless or not, if you're the victim of harassment by the police, they say move your vehicle along, even though nobody's complained, there's no problem except the police officer has made a decision for one reason or another to tell you to move along, and this happens quite regularly. It may not happen with 10 or 15 people a night. I don't think it happens with 10 or 15 people a night anymore, but it happens to such an extent that it makes people feel insecure in their persons and property. What do you think about that, Glenn?
Well, I'm starting to, as I try to take on the rest of my problems in my life, and I come back to the homeless issues, I realize that they're not insignificant because they are issues that affect every person at a different level. You know, I mean, these infractions that we're dealing with reflect on the speeding infractions, the parking infractions that also frequently do not have criminal intent. People just park there in actuality by mistake that they left there too long or what have you. There's a lot of things that people get upset about that are interwoven with the damage of homeless rights. And I a lot of experience I've had, I don't really blame homeless for many of the prejudice that accumulates against them. I do. I have my fits of discomfort have to do with the HCRC.
That's the Homeless Community Resource Center. The group out at 115 Coral Street, actually since 1992, set up in the Bays, maybe 93 or 94, that provides phones, showers, laundromats, and I guess a free meal. You have some beef with them. Why don't you talk about that?
Well, yeah, I'm concerned that they've gotten the power of God over street people. And the problem with that is that they don't have the emotional capacity to grow properly with that. They tend to rot with that power. And in that rotting, the homeless people suffer quite severely. And I have yet to see a hired person carry that power well. And with all the momentum of the negative use of power behind them, it's been bad.
Have you had bad experiences specifically that you want to kind of bring to our attention with HCRC?
Oh, God.
Or have you heard?
You want me to scare your audience here?
Yeah, it's Halloween isn't long gone. What do you got for us?
Well, I mean, last winter, some idiot somewhere kept trying to break their coffee. I mean, they'd be drinking the coffee and somebody tried to be putting them to sleep when they'd be drinking their coffee. And then they'd go ahead and try to make the coffee stronger by sipping on the homeless that are sleeping. And then, of course, you try waking up with that. And then, you scare yourself just waking up. Oh, my God, I'm going to die here tonight.
Now, wait a minute. Put this in other words for me, because I'm not quite clear.
No, I'm not going to repeat that. Thank you.
I'm unclear about that. What that means, but
well, I can repeat. I'll repeat it a little bit. I mean, I'll try
differently, so I can understand what you mean.
Well, the homeless. They have the staff have a 4-hour shift. Now, you'd think 4 hours isn't too long to stay up, but the daytimes they don't have places themselves. Frequently, they don't really have a place to go and sleep in the daytime to be able to and be up for this 4-hour shift they have in the evening.
Are we talking about the ISSP, the Interface Satellite?
No, actually,
program?
They only at last time I checked, they only had one member that did the night work. This is all HCRC staff.
So we're talking about daytime work in the homeless services center.
No, these are people that are hired to do the nighttime at the Armory. This is the
ISSP, which is part of the Armory.
No, actually not. They have the ISSP last time they supposedly merged, but ISSP hired one person to do that, but he had a different shift schedule system than the 4-hour shift that the HCRC people have.
So we're talking about the nighttime shelter program.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
okay,
but not the church groups now. This was the Armory.
Mm-hmm. So you found that the personnel covering the Armory were not up to snuff or were engaging in behaviors that were questionable because of inability to sleep during the day, or over caffeinating, or how am I getting this? Give me
moral lack of, just basic lack of caring,
And how did this manifest itself in a concrete behavior?
Concrete behaviors. Not only did they engage in non-caring behavior for the homeless, but the homeless, would be engaging in non-caring behavior with each other. So they're be working on each other to be able to stay healthy during the nighttime hours, and there's a certain percentage of people that didn't do well.
Kind of non-caring behavior? I mean, again, trying to get you
mostly behavior. Mostly trying to stay strong. Nighttime is fragile in Santa Cruz as it is.
Being quiet when people are trying to sleep.
No. We're talking about keeping your body alive. Keeping your spirit so that you recognize it in the morning. I'm still me.
Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued by what you're talking about. It certainly sounds like sort of a spiritual caretaking, but how would that manifest itself in terms of, let's say, how caretakers should behave, and how would they be violating a person's ability to replenish their spirit? What were they doing that interfered with that?
Well, one of the things is, one of the things that would obviously bother everybody is if people were sleeping up in the Armory and had a very pleasant night's sleep, when down here in these very expensive rents, people are being harassed by neighbors, that you don't have any control over. But these homeless are up there sleeping nice and cozy, and nobody's bothering them, and they have all these woods around them, and it's nice and quiet and warm. So there's all that. So there might be some subtle pressure from the town to say, well, they can't have it any better than we do. But it may not be that strong. I mean, it's probably just a thought here and there. It's nothing serious. Mm. But of course, you know, the staff may take it seriously frequently. And then you have the armory personnel. Who knows what deals they make on the side? Because they get it, there was all these intangible struggles between the armory personnel and the staff.
Well, I know there were complaints about the armory. I know that when some of us brought up some hot soup for people to have some extra food, the armory doesn't usually provide food, then the manager of the armory, Sugar and Papa John, turned us away and tried to actually, you know, called the guard. We've had problems when we tried to, I'm talking about Huff, we didn't go up to the armory but once, as I recall, last year, and we got the boot, and we weren't interested in, you know, any managing a takeover of the armory, just in providing a little food and offering some leftover food, and also actually we're helping a guy who was one of the workers.
Well, I didn't mean to scare you. I wrote them a letter recently. They have a new director down there.
Scared. I'm glad you bring up. I'm a little bit you know unclear as it almost sounds like a sort of a spiritual, almost mystical sort of.
But really,
criticism.
We're not machines,
that is,
you know. I mean, the system can try to tell us that all these things aren't real, you know, but. But you can't reduce human beings to machines because they don't function. I mean, it's not a reality to tell somebody that all these outs, all these internal experiences that you have are not real, or aren't real to other people, or whatever excuses they have to control your behavior to that extent. What I can't understand is all these abuses going on. They can actually force people to conform in the midst of their losing who they are, you know, in the very aspect of obeying these.
What abuses are you speaking of, and what ways are you talking about getting people to conform? Can you be more specific?
Well, you know, this is a long story, but I brought up an arthritis problem from Baja California from a policeman in Baja California who was able to hit my back really hard when I had my backpack and throw it out a little bit.
Gotcha.
And ever since, you know, that policeman has taken pride in being able to go after my back. I brought that problem all the way up here, you know, and I have illegals, you know, maintaining that bad spine of mine and hitting neighborhoods at quite a large scale, and we've got arthritis spreading over town from that event.
Ah, so you think there's a connection there. That's an unusual perception of how an illness spreads or a phenomenon spreads, but you know, I'm not an expert in those matters, though I don't know. You yourself, though, have been effective in avoiding police harassment under the sleeping ban, right? Pretty much.
Well, one thing I learned, you know, I don't, you know, this is my life, and as far as I know, it works. Mm-hmm. Resisting a police officer physically is not a good idea.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. And yet, passive resistance is not a good idea either, because they're gonna try to carry you away, hogtied, and that causes all kinds of problems. So just going with them and, you know, being quiet until you can get out of this mess, you know, is the best idea. No, I don't recommend fingerprinting though either, because they don't like the feds very much, and the feds don't like you, and there's no sense having your fingerprints sent into the feds.
I tend to agree with avoiding fingerprinting wherever possible, though. Often, of course, when you get, if you get actually arrested in a custodial fashion, you get fingerprinted and booked. And there is, you know, there's not much you can do about that unless you want to physically resist.
Yeah, I've avoided fingerprinting one time. I had a reason to, and there nothing came out of it. You know, well, actually a little bit.
I mean, you just said I won't be fingerprinted? Is that what you said?
Well, I said, you know, I can't. You know, I mean, because this, I mean, I basically said that I had a good reason not to, because of this was a second arrest on the same offense. They didn't have a good probable cause. They had issued an arrest warrant based on that I had not reported back to the probation officer that I had paid the fare. The ferry fare out of Alaska, that I had completed paying that fare. I took off. I forgot about it. I left and did not report the payment of that fare. And when I went in to clear up my record, a year or two later, I went in to work on cleaning up my record there. They pretty much handcuffed me right in the police quarters and told me I had an arrest warrant on me.
Well, I know that some people have been having that kind of problem here in Santa Cruz. We talked to James Ney, who is a homeless activist locally, who's been attending the Homeless Issues Task Force meetings. He was a supervisor up at the armory, or managed sort of the, he was in charge there for about a month.
Who is this now?
James Ney. It was the fellow with the black beard at the Homeless Issues Task Force.
Yeah, I've met him. He's real. He's a good guy.
Yeah, I like him too. He apparently got the runaround the other day he got into a conflict with staff of the courts in the basement of the county building. And I'm, you know, I, I, I've been dealing with these mostly women, almost entirely women for years down there, and you kind of evolve a certain style dealing with them. But, you know, you can get blocked, and if somebody takes a disliking to you, then you can, you know, you really, you know, you can find yourself in lots of trouble trying to just get certain basic information, secure certain basic rights, learn when your court dates are, get a printout, disqualify a judge. I mean, that can be a problem. We worked for years to get those clerks to say, when we came in, if we said we want to disqualify a judge, I use the term, broadly, Mulligan, who's the guy who normally hears cases in the basement of the courtroom down there, the basement of the county building, and is a very bad judge in terms of being a regular sort of fine grinder outer for the city and for the county. If you want to disqualify him, you should be able to say, I want to disqualify this judge, period. And they would kind of...
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, oh, you can. You can. I mean, you know, and all what you have to do now is they'll give you a page and they'll instruct you how to do it. But it took us 2 years to get them to do that. We had to provide our own pages initially saying, I swear under penalty of perjury that this judge is prejudiced. I mean, there's a sort of a little legal formula, but you shouldn't need a legal formula to assert your rights, which is the right to give a peremptory challenge of one judge. Everybody has that right in any case. And most people don't know about it. And that's too bad, but hopefully, you know, with shows like this and with passing out legal information, more people can learn about it.
Community support is really essential. I mean, that's one of the things I've been have historically left out a lot. People have to agree to come to consensus, because if you can't really come to agreement, you really can't. The community support becomes more difficult to do than it's
always worked. Better to have, you know, more people in concert, no question. On the other hand, there are some people who are never going to come to agreement with you. In fact, many times they're either part of the problem or they're just not interested in the whole situation because they feel it doesn't apply to them. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Free Radio. And actually tonight, I should let all you Free Radio fans know, up in Berkeley, Free Radio Berkeley, which is the grandmama of all these radio stations, at least the most recent wave of Free Radio stations, which began around 1993, though there were some scattered stations throughout the country before then. Illegal stations, some call us, pirate stations, micropower stations. We regard ourselves as free radio stations. You are able to say what you want on the air, name names, speak the truth as you know it. And hopefully the community can also, that's you, the listeners out there, we consider you the community, can call in to our number here, 427-3772, and contribute your thoughts on anything that we're talking about. Tell us what you think we're talking about is incomprehensible, irrelevant, ludicrous, or fine, great material, whatever, or just give your own thoughts about what we should be talking about. And that involves all of us in a dialogue in the community, which I think can be very productive in a way that commercial radio can't be, and even so-called non-commercial radio, public radio, which isn't really public. It's only public if you have access to, you know, the people who are running the public radio stations getting millions of dollars in grants, and that's really hard for most of us. But this is your radio station, so you call in, you can talk here, I'll talk back to you, and so will many of the other programmers. In fact, I don't know programmers who don't. So 427-3772 is number to call. We have on the air with us Glenn Rabinall, who's a local person concerned with basic human rights issues, concerned enough to, I guess, be pushing an initiative. You actually have two initiatives you're concerned about. The one that really impresses me, and of course you can talk about either of them, is this concern you have about getting rid of our venerable old police chief, Blue Shirt Belcher, the man who, for my money, rewrites the rules in order to facilitate his own department, and then gets the city council and the local boards to agree with him. The guy has got a silver tongue, or else maybe he's got a gun. I don't know what he's got, but he's got a little of this and a little of that.
Well, I've never seen the man. You know, it'd be nice to corroborate the evidence you find around town, what he looks like.
Oh, so listen, he comes to city council meetings. You should, you if you're at a city council meeting, he's frequently there. I'm sure he'll be there in December at when the shoulder tap, which I call it Belcher's crap, if you'll forgive me for being so graphic, or police state crap, comes back to city council. That's the law that says a minor who taps the shoulder of any adult, or any person, I guess, and says, will you buy me a beer, is guilty of a criminal offense. Just for saying that, not for getting the person to buy her or him a beer, which would be criminal anyway, but just saying.
Well, what bothered me about that is I was able to get the no loitering signs taken down off of Long's drugstore.
Very good. Excellent.
And that followed on that, and I don't see those disconnected to them like somebody tried to recuperate the territory by doing that one.
Yeah, well, I hear what you're saying. I think a lot of the motivation for this law comes from merchants who want to have some way to intimidate young people from clearing out from their stores. They don't want them to loiter. And because loitering laws were declared unconstitutional in the Lawson case.
Well, they are wrong. That's the whole thing. I mean, 15, I was able to demonstrate that too, is that the loitering in the California Penal Code, loitering includes the criminal intent. I mean, you have to be waiting around to commit a crime to be loitering. You're not just hanging out. And that's not the way those signs are posted, so there's no way to post those signs that don't violate your rights.
Well, when did you approach Long's about these signs?
Well, I approached them, but they passed me on to their property manager because the manager of Long's said that she didn't do that, that was the business of the property manager. She was in San Francisco, and I emailed her. Now you pinned me, I don't know, 4 weeks ago.
So it was relatively recently.
Yeah, it was quite
recent. And you got some response? They removed
they took them down. The second success I've had, and it was pretty significant, except they came back with this one, you know.
Right. Well, the shoulder tap, I think, is a thing by Belcher that predates your appropriate action at Long's. I think it was proposed like 2 months ago.
What's this now?
The shoulder tap law.
Oh.
In other words, it was initiated out of the police department, I think in September, maybe even August. Belcher always comes up with these traditional criminalizations, whether I think last year it was making it illegal to be on the riverbank after dark, even if you're doing nothing at all. Even if you're walking along with your sweetheart.
Well, that I have seen. That I've heard rumors about the police department. When the homeless people don't know what the laws are, don't know what their rights are, that they just throw them a whole bunch of bunk, you know. And a lot of times, they probably must have some history of the homeless people believing them because they keep doing it.
Well, this was a law that passed the city council in the summer of 98 with Byers, our great Mayor Byers, voting in favor of it. She wasn't mayor at the time, but she was on the council. And I think the only person to vote against it was Celia Scott, who was then mayor. And the law states that if you are anywhere on the riverbank, you know, between the levees, sitting, standing, walking, lying, flying, floating, whatever you're doing, after dusk, unless you're walking straight through, that is an infraction crime. And I suppose doing it twice is a misdemeanor. This is a Belcher production. He brought it to city council, he pushed it through, and it's now on the books. And of course, they use that as a basis for searching and harassing people on the riverfront. And also, of course, it has a secondary effect of denying ordinary people the right to use that area after dark.
Is there a policy of that type? I mean, is there any policy that relates to that?
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, I my basis of judging policy is only...
Not in city council policy?
Well, the city council policy is to give the police chief whatever he wants. Yeah. That's my experience.
Well, sometimes we call ordinances or we're called city council policies, which are an annual thing. I mean, they can be actually be updated.
It's a law. I mean, it is an ordinance change that they made about being on the riverbank after dark. It's sort of like they have a law against sitting on the sidewalk near a store, 10 feet from a store window. We call it the sitting ban, and that's an ordinance that was passed in '94. And then there was a huge protest against it. Police came in, rioted, broke one man's ribs, caused another woman to miscarry. And the courts threw out that law as being, the warning was prompted selective enforcement, and I think it was considered to be too vague.
Was Ray found, like I saw...
But then,
then
they repassed it again, with Byers' support, I might add. The sitting ban brought forward by these liberals who, you know, everybody thinks are just their grandmother in shining armor, but they're not. They're these wolves running around, you know, with granny clothes on. I'm talking about Mayor Byers, folks.
Well, you may not have
that. She's the one who is doing the dirty deed to homeless people. She's the one who could be doing exactly the opposite. Those three people were elected last year to make changes, to make this a more rational human scene, and she has just completely subverted that and dragged coaxed little Tim Fitzmaurice and his little red wagon with her. You might say I speak sarcastically about this, but
I was cited for supporting the so-called, you know, the so-called alternative city council by Officer Malate, and I have to assume there was some involvement by the city or some discomfort on the city council.
Now, what did Malate do? Tell me. You're talking about my favorite.
He cited me for political
CSO.
Offense as if I were panhandling on the mall. And it was not not an accurate citation. I mean, it wasn't. There was no. I was not panhandling.
Oh, he accused you of panhandling when what you were in fact doing was...
I was in fact displaying a sign giving people hope, or at least giving the alternatives hope, that there was an alternative city council they should get involved, and also telling the mainstream people that they had to watch out because there's an alternative city council. Now, looking back, I must say I feel quite naive, but I believed at the time that, then now I do not, that the politicians that run on an alternative platform, that once they're elected, especially when there's a majority of them, have the obligation to abide by those campaign promises. And I find even when there are a majority who made those campaign promises, they somehow do not have to abide by those promises.
No, that's the sad thing, that they don't have any. There's not, they're not held accountable in any legal way, or in any. The only way, of course, is the threat to throw them out or to embarrass them to death if they care about that. But often the politicians are shameless creatures that do what they want. But let me get back to this. What happened to you with Malade? Where did he give you this ticket? I mean, where
was it? Well, it was right near the change machine. I don't even know if I noticed the change machine there. And then he tells me that
near the Cinema 9 or?
No, this was, it's one of the empty lots there. It's on the mall. But, I don't know which block it was.
The Rittenhouse property across from the Cinema 9?
Well, Cinema 9. No, see, now I didn't go pace the place out. I don't know exactly.
So you were standing, because the only change making machine I know of, I think there's more than one, but I know the one that I know of is across, you know, as you walk up toward the coffee roasting company from the Cinema 9. There's a change machine on the corner there, where that big empty lot is.
Yeah, that's.
Was that more or less the area where you?
Well,
were?
It's right next to the empty lot with the picket kind of picket.
So you had a sign. Were you standing or sitting?
I was sitting. I was on the ground.
You were sitting. And what did Malade come and say to you?
Oh, basically that you were warned yesterday that you're in violation, and he didn't even want to, I mean, that I was requesting donations, and he did not have any room to hear what I was doing.
He
knew what I was doing.
Were you requesting donations?
No, I was talking. He heard me talk to people, but I wasn't requesting donations.
This guy has got to go, man. I'll tell you. I have been getting stories about him for a year, and sending that information back to the hosts and back to the city council to the Citizens Police Review Board. They don't do anything about him.
Well, I was gonna, I could do something about him. It's just that it's another load to take on because I have the transcript of the trial. I was found not guilty, and I had him. Or at least
I thought. What judge did you appear before?
A Patterson.
Oh right, he's the referee. He's sort of the mulligan alternate there in the
basement. He was pretty good about the code itself, but he was so rigorous it scared me quite right into the law. I mean, I dove into it completely. I mean, if this is the way the system is, in one way it was encouraging because I knew I'd come out on top if I dove into the law and just used the law exclusively. But now I'm finding this last judge, McAdams,
Before you get into that case, and I want you to talk about that, but let's go back to this case in Patterson's court. You essentially said I wasn't asking for spare change. I was engaging in political speech, right? That's what you said?
That was essentially it.
And what did our dear officer Malade say?
Well, first of all, he had one of the he had somehow gotten the citation location wrong in the municipal code. And subsequent to that, he pretty much reiterated he said that I had, well, basically he perjured himself.
In what way?
One thing he said that I had researched the ordinance prior to being out there, which provided a criminal intent because I knew the ordinance and yet I was engaging and disobeying the ordinance.
You were discussing the fact that there was no criminal intent involved. That was the argument.
No, back then I didn't know. I mean, back then I had not found that statute.
So he brought this issue up.
So yeah, well, no, but the way he changed his story tied right into being able to provide a criminal intent for the event.
So he changed his story, but Patterson apparently didn't go along with that. Said
well. Well, no, he made him repeat it quite a few times that this was the reason. He did catch him quickly one time when the officer Garner, who was the other officer who was there briefly, there was some mention of when Officer Garner showed up and Malade said, "Oh, and that's why," and Patterson cut him off because he was about to spill as to why he was issuing the citation because Officer Garner had given me a warning the other day. Or even maybe the previous day.
So both Garner and Malade apparently just didn't like you with your sign, eh?
They didn't like my presence. They were actually very disturbed by my mere presence on the mall.
When was this? What month approximately? Remember?
This was January. It was right after the city council went into a full-time office.
Right. Have you had any experience with either of these officers since in terms of any similar?
Well, I'm embarrassed to say I stayed away from the mall pretty much from then on.
I'm sorry.
I did all these years anyhow. I stayed away from the mall almost all the time.
So in fact, it chilled your free speech, even though you won the case.
Yeah, ultimately, it took a long time. Yep. I beat the stupid thing.
Yeah, well, of course, we've had the same problem. Officer Malate is notorious. I'm actually writing a piece for Street Spirit now with Becky Johnson to show up in the December issue that talks about Malate's history of criminal harassment of people. I don't know whether he's sort of one of these cranky older men, and I'm certainly one of those.
It's certainly gotten worse, you know.
I'm pretty cranky, but I mean, maybe give me a badge and a gun. I don't know what I do. I'll give me a badge and a baton. I don't think he carries a gun. He's a CSO, and a he has told older men with signs like yourself, asking for money more directly, not like you were engaging in political speech, but asking for money, which is completely legal. You're allowed to have a sign ask for money, provided you are not violating other laws. And you can even have a sign with money near an ATM machine, provided you are not verbally asking for money.
I need to go over this in detail. But they also see it's on the title of the chapter is aggressive solicitation.
Well, before we go into that, and I want to talk about that. I'm just trying to kind of give the rap on Malate, mm-hmm. because I actually talked to one of his fellow officers, his fellow CSOs. I guess his first name is Phil Malate, I believe is his name. I said, please do something about this man. You know, give him some counseling. Put him in a police officer's anonymous. I don't know what. Do something that will enable him to understand that he cannot simply continue to violate people's rights with impunity on this issue in any responsible fashion and without drawing down disrespect to the entire community on the community of police officers that is on the mall. Not that I, frankly, have a lot to say for cops who run around enforcing the downtown ordinances anyway, but he isn't. He's either constitutionally unable to distinguish what the law is, because he goes after you for panhandling when you're engaging in political speech. He goes after elderly 67-year-old John Telfair for holding up a sign for panhandling, which is not panhandling. It's panhandling if you verbally ask. That's what the
It's even milder than that. I proved to Judge Patterson that when you're seeking donations, you can even speak, because there is one clause that says that the person is actually not homeless. I mean, you can be requesting donations anyway.
No, you're definitely allowed to request.
What I'm saying
is there are two sets of laws. One is if you make verbal requests for money, there's a tighter series of strictures on the way you can do it. You can't be 3 feet from a person. You can't be in a seated position.
Well, one of the catch words request for money. They require that it's an immediate request.
Right.
That tends to, when you look up the corresponding state codes, it refers, they talk about accosting a person, asking them for alms. It's a matter, you have to be actually intimidating the person to violate the
ordinance. You would think that the ordinance, the state ordinance that you're talking about, and it would be the reasonable basis for our local city laws, which would have to do with abusive panhandling. But in fact, and this is the reason that a lot of us came out on the streets against this ordinance in 1994, this ordinance doesn't talk about abusive panhandling. If you read the city code, it lays down simply a whole series of strictures on when and where you can ask for money, however you do it in terms of verbal speech.
They try to get around that.
If you have a sign, you can do it any time you want. But if you ask, if you use your mouth to say, can I have money for food, clothing, shelter, booze, heroin, whatever you're asking money for, to kill my mom, I don't care. If you ask for money verbally, then they have this whole series of specific rules they set down. You can't do it after dark. You can't do it from a seated position. You can't do it in a group of two. This is the whole city code. But note, this has nothing to do with abusive panhandling. It doesn't have to do with pursuing someone, being abusive by being obscene to them, and so forth. So we've talked about this before. We're trying to get these damn laws changed by getting the Homeless Issues Task Force to come out and say, forget this. Let's have a whole different way of dealing with these problems.
Well, one of the things about the state is that it's had to deal with these kind of litigations enough so that a lot of the statutes have been corrected. I mean, I don't think the city attorney has ever come off his high horse. I mean, I don't think he's ever, I mean, there are two significant, I've got two significant errors in the city charter, for goodness sakes. And you know, this is charter of the city. And, not just typos either. These are, large section problems in the city charter. And
you're talking about, and let me get you back. And I know I'm kind of dragging you around here on this thing, but I want to kind of focus on a couple things. You have a proposed initiative to, is it recall Steve Belcher? I guess you can't recall.
Well, he's not elected.
Get
but I happen to design a creative way in which that can be done. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though he's not elected, ordinances are binding, and theoretically, the chief of police is quite easily fireable. In fact, by the mayor or by the mayor and somebody else.
Definitely, a city council the manager can fire the police chief, and the manager can be directed by a city council majority to do that. However, The city council so far has not found itself so inclined even to consider that possibility, even with the city attorney, who is notorious for his decisions that, you know, support developmental groups that are completely antithetical to what the city council majority was passed, you know, was elected for. And for example, in the beach area redevelopment plan of last year, the Third Street realignment, they haven't had the balls, because these are men, except for buyers, to actually bring forward a resolution that says fire the city attorney, or at least replace the city attorney with someone who, you know, seems to be more environmentally friendly, someone who is not in the pocket of the police chief and in the pocket of the, you know, the downtown association, or who is inclined to stand up for civil rights with respect to the police department. I like John Barisoni personally. I got to say this. I always say this because it's true. I called him today. He talked to me on the phone. He takes calls. He answers questions often. The answers he gives don't usually satisfy me, but at least he'll talk to me. He's not inaccessible to me. But unfortunately, he has admitted, let's take the case of, I sat on the base of the statue of Tom Scribner, the musical saw player, in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz. I was given a ticket for it. I said, what are you doing? This is customarily used for this purpose. It's exactly in accord with the language of the code section you say I violated, which says you can't stand, sit, lie, or drool on a you know, the base of a monument, which is not customarily used for that purpose. Well, it is customarily used. You'll see people sitting there every day. People are photographed sitting there. I said, what are you doing? I took this to Barisoni. He said, well, I could only dismiss it if the police department will dismiss it. And I said, you mean you haven't got the power to? He says, I have the power, but I've never used it. Here's a man who says that in every case, he has allowed the police department to make these decisions. It's, you know, it's really unfathomable to me why the city council will not go after this guy. And insofar as you're proposing that Belcher be made accountable, let's say be given a new job, possibly in some other city somewhere else.
The title is The Letting Go of Police Chief Steve Belcher.
Why don't you read this for us, Glenn? What do you got there?
All right. Well, the reason I wrote this is because I decided, you know, there's only so much work we can do to get things done, and they're making us go less than an inch at a time to get these civil rights, you know, our civil rights back, and it's time consuming. I figure, well, if we get rid of the chief of police, if we let go of the chief of police and hire, and I'm going to go in for 3 months. And that should shake them up enough, and then we get a real one. I want one straight out of police academy. I want a young, honest cop.
Now, wait a minute. Are you volunteering to be the new police chief?
Yes, actually, I am. The
police chief Glenn. This could be a
yeah. No, I got disenchanted.
A new scene here.
I got disenchanted with doing any more in 3 months. I mean, I had these brief illusions of this working out.
If Robert Steffen could run for president, I see no reason why you can't run for police chief. I'm sure you do a better job than the current chief. I have to tell you
that would not be any.
Not that that's a great compliment. I got to tell you. I think a lot of people would do a better job.
Anyway, I'll read this.
Go ahead.
The body of the ordinance. This ordinance, enacted by initiative petition, is to cause the replacement of Santa Cruz Police Chief Steve Belcher with a suitable replacement until a suitable replacement is found. The essence of this ordinance is the cooperation between the temporary replacement and the public. The conditions for replacing Steve Belcher are as follows. The initial employment period for the replacement will be 3 months with an ongoing hiring option on dissatisfactory hiring of chiefs of police through normal channels. Number two, there is to be frequent renegotiation of enforcement priorities with the public through the forum of city council during the three-month period. A series of state laws have been discovered governing the areas this police department has been derelict in. These will be made available to members of the public attending city council for their review. They are available on the net at http://leginfo.ca.com, roll down, press California law. The statutes to be enforced are, and then I went through all these, Penal Code 26, 182, 370, 371, 372, 118.1, 631, 236, 237, Title 9, Chapter 1, beginning with Section 261. That's the whole chapter on rape. And you've got California Constitution, Article 1, Sections 2 and 7, Article 11, Section 7, Health and Safety, 7208, Government Code 37100, And then it goes on to say, Santa Cruz PD police officers need to be aware of the following sections of California Code plus one of the U.S. Code, Penal Code 12, Vehicle Code sections 13,000, 13,003, 20, 21, Elections Code sections 18,101, 18,200.
You better skip these numbers because most people, of course, don't know what you're talking about. But they're available on the net for those of you who are interested. Is there a place where people can get a copy of this?
I'll have to put it in good format. I need to put it on a good petition so that the public will be reading this as I'm getting signatures.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, it finishes. I underlined this part. This ordinance is to be amended upon successful hiring of a chief of police to retain the enforcement of the state statutes here mentioned. These will have been reviewed by the public for their approval. A brief history of the inclusion of these state statutes in municipal code will be included in the revision. This ordinance prohibits the city from requiring that the temporary chief of police enforce municipal codes in conflict with state statutes under government code 37-100 in Article 11, Section 7 of the California Constitution. The temporary replacement, Glenn Elwood Ravenhill, promises he is of upstanding character and obedient to the laws of the state.
There's the name of that temporary police chief.
Yeah, I guess I didn't put myself in.
And that's you. I wanted to point out this man is not armed as far as I can see here.
No, I hate guns. I hate guns. So
you're
going to
have a police chief without guns. Is this a police force? Are you going to disarm the police?
I'll try to disarm about 50% of them. I figure that so many of the laws that need to be put in have to do with civil rights. That them not carrying guns is almost essential to be able to get those laws properly put in and dealt with.
DeCenzo is going to have a great day with this, but I would like to see a police force relying on something other than lethal force, and I think that's a real possibility here. And of course, it hasn't been tried. I'm sure we'll get the scoffing of folks everywhere, but that sounds like my kind of the direction to go in. Away from lethal force. You're listening to Bathroom Spears Broadsides. For those of you who just tuned in and wonder what the heck is going on here, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and here's a little music for you.
Yankee Doodle came to town, H-bombs in his pocket. Says, chum, if you don't toe the line, I'll blast you with me rocket.
Yankee Doodle, Uncle Sam, Batman, also Superman, known from here to Vietnam as Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle went to Mars, landed on a Sunday, found some people living there and killed them off by Monday.
Yankee Doodle, Uncle Sam, Batman, also Superman, known from here to Vietnam as Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle went to work as hard as he was able, bombing schools and hospitals and babies in the cradle.
Yankee Doodle, Uncle Sam, Batman, also Superman, known from here to Vietnam as Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yankee Doodle's got a plan, it's called defoliation. Tried it out in Vietnam to civilize the nation.
Yankee Doodle, Uncle Sam, Batman.